follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. This is Chicago's Home for Sports, ESPN Chicago.
It was a good day for Chicago baseball, he said quizzically to his co-host Brian Hanley as he opened the show. Jeff Meller, Brian Hanley with you till 11 o'clock here today on ESPN 1000. I mean, both baseball teams won, so that's a good thing. However, at the current point in the season that we're at, you have to ask yourself, what does it really mean when your baseball team wins and they're sitting in these weird spots? Well, I say weird. The White Sox, we know what they are. Everyone should has. I think we've all grasped that at this point, right? But the Cubs.
Well, maybe want to clue them in.
Because, oh boy!
Again, yesterday the comments. We just got to bleep the with zero in. Lance Lynn said, "Lock in, bleep and lock in." Now it's well past time. It there is no time.
Time to lock in.
Yeah, it's you know, you can. God bless positivity. Someone needs to let everyone know. Either side of town. Let's stop deluding ourselves. Yeah, all right?
94 games in, Bri. Let's lock in. This is it. This is time.
Yeah.
I mean, Lance Lynn still got visions of, you know, leading the Southsiders to the playoffs. I was wondering, has Lance Lynn pitched his last game for the White Sox yesterday?
Well, you know what? That was another positive yesterday. It wasn't as good as three or four before that, but it's sure better than the total body of work, right? I mean, there's reports out of St. Louis that that they would like to see Lance Lynn back and maybe even pick up the club option at $18 million, assuming that he can continue to do what he's been doing the last four starts or so. So, my ears bleed every time I hear that, okay, yeah. Now we're coming out of the All-Star break and we just got to go on this run against some of the toughest teams of baseball. And even on the north side, please stop.
Baseball.
Just stop. Stop. It's not happening.
Baseball with the addition of all the extra wild card teams is hilarious because, you know, you mentioned it. The Cardinals report that they'd be intrigued to bring Lance Lynn back, who had a lot of success earlier in his career with the St. Louis Cardinals, way back when Tony La Russa was managing the Cardinals, by the way. The Cardinals are 39-53, just two games in the loss column better than the White Sox, who are 39-55 after yesterday's win. I don't know. Baseball is at this weird spot where I know Ken Rosenthal wrote the other day in his piece in the Athletic about how he basically declared the White Sox one of the definite sellers, you know, based on his observation and analysis of baseball, which makes sense to you.
Oh,
right.
Lord.
But like you said, you have those comments. And I was thinking, you know, as we go through this day in and day out, I think Sahadev did a good job too in the Athletic of laying out. I'll take his numbers here. He noted like the Cubs, the dramatic swings have defined their season. Right, they started 12-7, and then they followed that up with a 14-29 stretch. Then they went 11-2, which had them close to 500, only to go back to 1-7. And then they closed the break at 5-2, right? Now they open the after the All-Star break here 1-1. It's you can't, if you're the Cubs or the White Sox, you can't let the next 2 weeks determine what you're really going to do. You have to have come to some sort of resolution. I think if you're actually running your franchise like a proper front office in this day and age, right? Like you have had to come to terms with the reality of where you sit. I don't care about the Cubs' Pythagorean win total, which would have them, I guess, theoretically 48-43 as opposed to 43-48, which is nice.
Right.
It's a nice thing
because
to say.
Because the run differential, yeah.
Yeah, but like again, you can only cling to the fact that you're still seven games back here, and you've got two pieces on your roster in Marcus Stroman and Cody Bellinger, who, of course, also had a grand slam yesterday and has been hot as of late. You've got two pieces there that are probably going to be the most valuable pieces at the deadline here. And, who are you fooling if you're the Cubs, even if you go on a little run here over the next week or so?
Well, I mean, your actions or non-actions are speaking louder than your words. And we talked to Paul Sullivan last week, a visit with Sully, longtime baseball scribe, the dean of baseball scribes in the city. And he wrote a very facetious column, sarcastic column, because Jed Hoyer has been asked pretty much every week, if not every day, about buyers, sellers, as we get closer to August 1st trade deadline. And Jed said, I don't want this to be a day-to-day assessment type thing. Well, that would be prudent. It's baseball, he said. So Sully said, let's make it inning by inning and just dissect it, you know, the game yesterday. Oh, we're a seller. Oh, no, Marcus Stroman's doing really well. We're a buyer. There goes a Cody Bellinger Grand Slam. We're a buyer. No, we're selling. Yeah.
Wait. We're going to buy because we're going to win today. But wait, the guy who led us to a victory is very valuable in the trade market.
So the fact that Marcus Stroman yet again said he doesn't see a contract extension coming after going out there and doing what he's been doing for the better part of the season.
Yep.
The non-actions of the front office on the north side in particular tell you that Marcus Stroman's going to be dealt. And now it's just a matter of to whom and for what. And you mentioned alluded Cody Bellinger. I mean, the guy is hotter than hot right now. And so obviously, you know, there are teams that are going to love to have his bat and you can put him at first. You obviously play the outfield. It just makes too much sense given the percentages and the fan graphs projections and your likely percentage to be a playoff team. Both teams are selling. It's just a matter now. Do you have faith in your front office and in particular Jed Hoyer and Rick Hahn and yesterday on Twitter, I'm going through Twitter and Giolito is trending and you know,
sure.
Douglas Lucas.
What did I miss?
Well, it's just some of the pie in the sky returns people are expecting to get for Lucas Giolito as a rental. And he's been terrific. And, you know, the fact that Shane Bieber is now on the DL and was going to be shopped by Cleveland, that's one less arm. So, I mean, I don't know. Take Shohei Ohtani out of the equation.
Yes.
Okay. And I don't know if you can do that because John Morosi says the A's are, or the Angels are in listening mode, whatever that means.
Yes.
Okay. You know, they're listening to the Dodgers. They're going to listen to the Yankees. They're going to listen to the Padres, whomever they're listening to. Is he going to be dealt? I don't know. But if he's not dealt, is Stroman the next guy, next pitcher up, the best pitcher available? Is it Giolito? Is it 1-1A? So what's realistic? I mean, what's if for, and I know Sox fans in particular are going to say, why is Rick Hahn even in the position to reload here and start another rebuild, given what's gone on here in the last few years? But he apparently is, and he apparently will. And I'd love to hear from, you know, both sides of town, fans, what the idea, like on Twitter, some people are like, oh, I need two position players and three of the top prospects out of your organization for Lucas Giolito. Oh, come on.
Yeah.
Just okay. Slow your roll. Okay. You'd be lucky to get one of the top prospects in said organization and a middling prospect. Now, if you throw in Lance Lynn or sweeten the deals, I mean, I don't know how much of a sweetener that is, but if you package something, then you can maybe expand the return. But,
well, you know, it's interesting, Bri, like I'm of the mind if I'm the White Sox and I am going to, trade Giolito because that makes the most sense. And to your point, whether he's 1 or 1A, you know, right after Stroman, I think, you know, it's probably in the eye of the beholder. There's some people out there who probably like Giolito's ability to strike out hitters more than Stroman. So there might be some people who actually would prefer Giolito if they had their choice. But I'm sure it's going to come down to, with all the teams, every team obviously always needs pitching at the trade deadline.
I mean, so, the Dodgers really need pitching. Now, Clayton Kershaw's getting an MRI. Yep. He said, oh, I'm fine. Well, you're not fine if you're getting an MRI. I guess they're just making sure he's fine, but he's still going to miss a couple weeks here. And, I mean, their starting rotation's looking a little bit thin.
And, boy, is it taking its toll on them as they've won six in a row, Brian.
Yeah, boy, yeah. Good organizations can overcome things. But, you know, you want to position yourself in the postseason to have some depth there, I think.
No, there's no doubt about it. And, yeah, I think maybe our job is to give, you know, fans out there a cold dose of reality that, you know, if you're the Sox, I think the move is to essentially shop Giolito. And here's the thing. It really should be, I think it should be paramount to move him sooner rather than later, because if you can beat other teams to the market.
Amen.
And here's, like, listen, Lucas Giolito, if you get him into your clubhouse now, you probably, before the trade deadline, you get two, maybe three extra starts out of him.
That's big.
Absolutely. And, you know, every inning matters. And in this era where starting pitchers, if they go 150 innings on the season, they've done their job. You know, that's 15 innings right there, 10% of what you can expect from a pitcher that you can probably grab from Giolito if you go ahead and make that move. So,
I mean, how much more can he improve his stock with another start or two? And that's what you're looking at, basically, with 2 weeks to go, a little over 2 weeks to go. And you hold your breath that there's an injury. Even, you know, it's not a high probability or percentage chance. But the fact of the matter is he's done what he needed to do to put you in this position. And Marcus Stroman, you know, ditto. And we can talk about what he said yet again. He loves Jed. He loves the organization. But he also is very, you know, there's no contract extension coming and he can opt out. And what does that all tell you? How much more can he improve his stock right now? Why do you have to wait? If reports are true that the Reds already checked in with the White Sox and the Dodgers have checked in with the White Sox, and I'm sure Jed Hoyer's getting calls on Marcus Stroman and Bellinger, I don't know what else you need to, you know, what you hope they can do one more start to appreciably increase the return you're going to get for these guys. They are who they are. Yes. The season is what it is.
No, that's a great point. At this stage of the season, there for the Cubs and the White Sox, I would say there's no upside to letting Stroman, Giolito, Lynn make any more starts for your team if you could avoid it. Because I don't think I actually made the point, but what I was like, if I'm the White Sox, my move is Giolito. Yes, you obviously want him. I'm going to haggle over the prospects I want in your organization. If you're the Reds or whoever, if you're the Reds in particular, or maybe even the Dodgers, you play those two off of each other because those are the teams that look like they're, you know, they have very good shots of being in the playoffs, and both need pitching immensely because of the injuries, or just for, you know, aside from Hunter Green, the fact that the Reds have no real pitching. You want to play those two off of each other, and then maximize your return. So if it happens to be, look, Dodgers, you've lost Dustin May for the season. You know, Walker Buehler is still returning from Tommy John surgery. And even though they thought maybe initially at the start of the season, he might be able to return, you know, in late August, early September, that still is completely up in the air. So that doesn't look like they have any more clarity on him. And you just mentioned Clayton Kershaw. So they could use a couple of arms. So if I'm the White Sox, you know, I don't know how much value Lance Lynn has on his own. But what Lance Lynn might offer you is the opportunity to package him up with Lucas Giolito to go ahead and grab the elite prospect that White Sox fans are out there on Twitter hoping for as a return in exchange for Lucas Giolito.
Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. And I'm with you. I don't understand why you would make another start either side of town for Stroman and Giolito and even Lance Lynn. I mean, the fact that he's put together a little run here, to the fact where John Mosleyak down in St. Louis telling Derek Gould, our buddy at the Post-Dispatch, that they're positioning for 2024. Now, 6 weeks ago, I said that the Cardinals don't do conceding. And yes, I think they have one sub-500 season in like 25 or more years. But that was 6 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And now it's very apparent that it would take a miraculous stretch here to be a playoff team. So he's talking about not giving up Goldschmidt and all things he won't do because he's positioning for 2024. And he mentioned, or he didn't mention, but Derek Gould mentioned Lance Lynn because it would be tampering. But God bless him. If St. Louis thinks there's something to be said to have Lance Lynn joining him for whatever you can get, if you can't put him and package him and expand the Giolito deal. But at least he's done something in the last 2-3 weeks to give you some positive when you talk to teams about Lance Lynn.
No doubt about it. That's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller, 312-332-3776. If you want to check in with us talking about our baseball teams here in the city of Chicago as the trade deadline approaches, what would you like to see each team do? Give us a call. Check in. We're here till 11 o'clock. Jesse Rogers will hop on at 10:30 as well. We'll pick his brain about what the two local teams should do as the trade deadline approaches. Meller and Hanley here till 11 o'clock.
Listen to the show in HD at 100.3 HD2 FM. This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Mel and Hanley hanging out with you until 11 o'clock today on this Sunday morning. getting you set for White Sox baseball here on ESPN 1000 as the Sox will conclude their series in Atlanta against the Braves. They got the win last night, 6-5 over, boy, that team is just, even when you beat them 6-5, it just feels like you got out, you survived that one. Actually, the White Sox did survive that one. Let's not pretend like they didn't, as the game wrapped up like this here on ESPN 1000.
And a pitch, swinging a broken bat and roller. Tim will pick it up. He steps on second, throw to first. White Sox win a 6-3 game-ending double play.
Tim Anderson, did he boost his trade value there, Brian, with that game-ending saving double play to squeeze Kendall Graveman out of a jam?
Well, look, I mean, at least he came up with a double play, because I'm watching the game and I'm watching Twitter at the same time, and everyone's lamenting that there he is in the second spot in the lineup yet again, and doing what Tim Anderson, unfortunately, has been doing. He's over 4-2 strikeouts, but at least, I mean, it was a good win. I think it was also telling yet again that in a solid win, arguably one of the better wins of their season, and you don't have, you know, spoiled for choice. But you have Pedro Grifol talking about lack of focus and lack of detail and things. You know, God bless the manager, rookie manager, taking responsibility for that. But we're pretty far into the season when we were sold in the offseason that from day one, this was going to be the sea change with getting rid of Tony La Russa. And, you know, Rick Hahn telling you that Grifol is a unbelievable, quote-unquote, renowned communicator and modern baseball mind, who's going to seek to rebuild a cohesive and inclusive clubhouse environment, and one where attention to detail and accountability will be priorities. And yesterday, you have the manager, renowned communicator and modern baseball mind, saying, we've got to be better at it. That's something we've spoken about individually, and he's all these meetings. But again, the focus hasn't been there. And anyone watching White Sox baseball will tell you the focus hasn't been there.
Yeah, we'll see if they're focused today. Pre-game coverage comes your way at 12 o'clock today. I mean, listen, at the very least, it is interesting to watch the Braves closely. I mean, you saw that lineup is just unrelenting. Man, you know, I heard Connor mention they're, you know, they're chasing the Yankees, the 2018 Yankees, for consecutive games with a home run. They've just been bashing the ball. And it makes sense, because you look up and down their lineup, it seems like everybody has double-digit home runs. And then, by the way, Ronald Acuna, Matt Olson, you know, Ozzie Albies, you know, has got 20-some-odd home runs, and he looks like someone who could barely poke the ball through the infield. So they are just a ridiculous lineup. And then, oh, by the way, I'll give the White Sox credit, too. They put it on Spencer Strider a little bit, which that's absolutely hard to do.
And a lot of really good two-strike at-bats, and they found a way, and two-out at-bats where they found a way, and that's great. And it's a feel-good for them for in the moment. But, you know, as I'm sitting here, and you know, John Morosi and John Heyman and Neymar John, who's a baseball guru, and they're all telling you who's checking in with the White Sox. And in the next sentence, they're writing, well, here are the untouchables.
Yes.
And I, you know, I'd love to pick your brain. I'd love to pick White Sox brains. I'm going to stipulate, Your Honor, that Luis Robert shouldn't go anywhere.
Okay,
makes sense. I may stipulate Dylan Cease shouldn't go anywhere, but maybe I'm open to that conversation, depending if you're going to wow me or not.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's probably the most interesting name on the White Sox roster, because Giolito, you have put yourself in a position. You know, this is too, where The philosophy of Jerry Reinsdorf not looking to get into long-term deal with pitchers, right? So you've put yourself in a position with Lucas Giolito where there's no discussion, right? It is what it is with him. It would have made, I think, in some ways, it would have made some sense to try and get him signed up to a deal last year when he was coming off a pretty tough year. But if you truly believed in him, you know, get him signed up to a little bit, a team, to a deal that's a little bit more team friendly, because he has been a great character guy, you know, somebody who you like having in the clubhouse. And honestly, you can never have too much pitching. So even, like, here's the thing, like, look at the Lance Lynn number. You mentioned the St. Louis Cardinals last segment about how they're interested in trading back for him and even picking up that option, because the reality is Lance Lynn, who goes 5 1/3 yesterday, gives up 4 earned runs, but he does strike out six in that process. His ERA went up yesterday to 6.06. In a solid outing, because it was the Braves, his ERA went up to 6.06. And yet still, you have a team like the Cardinals saying, yeah, we're intrigued by that. And we're intrigued because we want to pick up his option at potentially $18.5 million next season, because the value of pitching, you can't get a discount on pitching in the free agent market. So if you have any hints of a player who you could rely upon, then you'll pay a premium for it. And so I don't know why the White Sox didn't try harder to get a deal done with Giolito last offseason, but now they've put themselves in a position where there's nowhere to go with him. They have to trade him at the deadline, because otherwise you're just going to put yourself even further behind where you hope to be, because you can't just let assets walk out the door for nothing. And Lucas Giolito at this trade deadline is probably your best asset. And so to the Dylan Cease point, I think he's the interesting conversation, because I don't see them moving off of him anytime soon. They would have to be absolutely wowed because of the team control that they'll have on Dylan Cease. And he's obviously, he was runner-up in the Cy Young last year. But let's be honest here too, Bri. I don't think any team is going to come anywhere close to what the asking price would be for Dylan Cease, because he has struggled a bit this year.
Sure.
And
sure.
So this would be selling low on probably your most valuable pitching arm.
He's your most valuable pitching arm, and he's under control for another year, right? So that all would add into how much are you going to give me for him. But, so if we stipulate Dylan Cease isn't going anywhere and shouldn't, fine. I'm not going to stand on a bandbox and say, get rid of Dylan Cease. But unless someone just picked up the phone and said, like the Quintana trade, here's Dylan Cease and Eloy Jimenez. Why is Eloy Jimenez on the untouchable list? Andrew Vaughn, I know what they think they have in Andrew Vaughn, and you probably, the numbers being what they are this year, you're not going to get wild by it. But, given where you were last year and where you are this year, that untouchable list should be a lot shorter than four or five. That's my point, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah, no, for sure. And you know what you mentioned, just scrolling through Twitter, our buddy Darren on Twitter, he pointed out, he's a Cubs fan, but he said he doesn't want a forever rebuild, but he's braced for the idea of them dealing Marcus Stroman and Cody Bellinger. He's ready for them. He's assuming they're going to be gone. But he said, for Sox fans, if they've messed this up so bad that they have to trade Luis Robert, he would go on strike. And
right.
Luis Robert, at this point, right, he's the only untouchable. He has to be, right?
Yeah. And like I said, we can pretty much stipulate Dylan Cease, given the fact of who we know he is when he's on. And even with his struggles this year, I'm not saying, you give up on him. You're not giving up or giving him away. I just say, if someone just gave you a ridiculous amount in return, you have, if this is what, rebuild 3.0, then you have to be open to anything, pretty much. And the Windy City did a nice job talking about what does a return from the Dodgers look like for Giolito. We get into that, but some very nice comparables. And to give credit to Todd Welter, posted that this morning. We get into it, but what is realistic when you're looking at returns? And it's a start, right? This is the position the collective White Sox have put themselves in, whether it's the architect and the roster builder in the front office of Rick Hahn, or whether it's the rookie manager or coaching staff didn't get attention and detail from day one, or it's just the players are not exactly made for this day and age of MLB. It is what it is, and it's not very good.
Yeah, no, it's a bad spot to be in, and the other thing too is if you're really, really open to trading Dylan Cease, I guess I go back to like this organization's philosophy. Is Dylan Cease just going to walk out the door, Brian, anyway, when he becomes a free agent, because you don't want to sign him to a long-term deal? Because let's be
honest. That's not what you do as the White Sox. I guess there's a possibility. Well, the owner is the owner. And if that's Jerry's philosophy and his business plan, no matter if Rick Hahn survives this or not, if there's someone else sitting in that office in the off season and calling the shots, and can he tell the, you know, tell the owner, the boss, that, well, we need to wake up and give 5-year deals at X, you know, fill in the numbers? Or is that just because the owner's not going to do that? It doesn't matter who's making the telephone calls or receiving them, because the Sox just don't do that. So then what do you do? Then we're sitting here next year with Dylan Cease, hopefully having a better season, and he's the guy we're trying to figure out what you're going to get in return.
Yeah, and now they still have, you know, this is where, too, the idea of, you know, the arbitration process, they'll still have, you know, 2 more years of control with Dylan Cease. So he's arbitration eligible next season for the second year. And then in 2025 will be the final year where he will be ARB eligible, and he'll be an unrestricted free agent in 2026. So you have 2 more years of control with Dylan Cease. But yeah, if I don't
that number, it, that arbitration number is going to look it, pretty ooh, damn.
That's a great counterpoint.
Yeah.
It's you know, you get to that final season of arbitration, and honestly, that one season is going to be a big number for Dylan Cease. I don't know what it will be in a couple of years for.
Well, look, if the Cardinals are willing to think $18 million, yeah, $18.5 million for Lance Lynn is a relative bargain, okay, start at 30 with Dylan Cease for 1 year and tell me I'm out of my mind there.
No, it's I don't know. It's a brutal position to be in right now if you're Rick Hahn. Yes, it's somewhat of your own doing, right? But the reality is, I think they have a lot of odd choices to make, especially in a season in 2023 where the whole, from the organization, the messaging was, listen, we've got a new manager here. Things are going to be different. There's a fresh outlook. We're back in this. And then in a year when you have quite possibly one of the worst divisions ever assembled, you're not even in shouting distance in all reality.
And expanded playoffs, too. Ugh, I mean,
it's a bad, bad spot for the White Sox and White Sox fans to be in right now. 312-332-3776, taking your calls as we discuss the trade deadline. All right, I have a question for Brian I want to bring to his attention here. I don't think it's necessarily the wisest way to approach it, but I want to ask, should Jed Hoyer do something to make a bold move here, which would probably only give you a small percentage of playing out, but I think it's your best odds to land the big fish? I'll talk about it next here on ESPN 1000. Jeff Mellor, Brian Hanley back with you here on ESPN 1000, hanging out with you till 11 o'clock today. Jesse Rogers is going to hop on in about an hour from now. We'll ask him what he thinks the best and most prudent moves for our local baseball team should be as the trade deadline approaches, the trade deadline August 1st this season. And, Bri, basically the story of baseball, the one-man wrecking crew across the season here, homered again last night, Shohei Ohtani, who
33?
He hit number 33. Now, initially, it seemed like a fairly innocuous home run as he homered in the ninth inning to bring the Angels within two. It was 12-10 at that point against the Houston Astros. But sure enough, the Angels actually, that sparked a rally for the Angels, and they went on their way to actually beat the Astros 13-12, pulling them within one game of .500, the Los Angeles Angels. And
having, you know what? It's time for the Angels to lock in.
They
really need to bleep and
boy,
lock in.
Can you imagine what Shohei Ohtani is capable of if he locks in, Bri? My, oh, my. He hit his 33rd home run last night, and the Angels now currently sit 5 games out of that third and final wild card spot in the American League. Of course, they're 5 games out, but they'd have to climb over 3 teams just to get to that spot. And, oh, by the way, the Mariners are tied with them, and the Cleveland Guardians are a half game back. So the Angels,
you got to break out of the pack there.
Yeah.
And then hopscotch 3 teams.
Yeah. They're in an absolute dogfight just for that third and final playoff spot. And they're going to have to do so. If they do get back into it, they're going to have to do so without Mike Trout, who has been lost with the broken hamate bone about a week or so ago. So he's not going to return for another month at least. And so I think the real question is, What exactly are the Los Angeles Angels going to do with Shohei Ohtani? Buster only provided some insight a couple days ago.
As of this moment, he's not available, but that could be tested in the next 2 weeks, because when you look at the Angels' schedule coming out of the gate, they're going to be facing a bunch of teams that they're actually chasing in the standings. Now, as of this morning, they're 5 games behind in the wild card race. According to Fangraphs, 11% chance of making the playoffs. But right out of the gate, they face the Astros this weekend. We have Sunday Night Baseball. Then they face the Yankees. Then a couple series later, they're going to be facing the Toronto Blue Jays. These are all teams that they're chasing. That will give clarity to owner Artie Moreno as to whether or not he's going to potentially trade Ohtani. And look, the right baseball decision might be to flip Ohtani for 3 prospects who can help you going forward. But man, it is going to be a difficult decision for Artie. Because let's face it, trading a guy having arguably the greatest season we've ever seen, the most unique player we've ever seen, that's something that's going to cement Artie's name in history. You remember the name Harry Frazee? He was the guy who dealt Babe Ruth from the Red Sox to the Yankees. That's what Artie would be looking at if he trades Ohtani out of Anaheim.
Again, asinine to base basically multi-million dollar decisions on, you know, a couple of week hot stretch from your baseball team. But that seems to be, you know, what everything is based around on the South side, and what Buster Olney is saying the Angels are, how they're approaching it with Shohei Ohtani. I get it. He's awesome. But the reality is, like, at this point, haven't you, if you're the Angels, sewn up and you basically sealed your fate with Shohei Ohtani? He's been there now. You know, this is his 6th season. I think he's probably seen enough to prove, especially when he said at the All-Star game, losing sucks, right? So I think you've probably sealed your fate as an organization. The writing's on the wall with him. He is very unlikely to return to the Angels. We've talked a lot this year, Brian, about how the Cubs should be in on Shohei Ohtani's free agency this upcoming offseason. My question to you is the Cubs' best move to blow the Angels away with an offer so they can make their pitch to Shohei Ohtani now, starting this season? He can see what it's like to play at Wrigley. And granted, you know, it may ultimately not work out in your favor, but we've talked about how he wants to be on the West Coast. I think the best chance for the Cubs to actually land the generational player we've talked about more than probably any other player who doesn't play in this town this season is to go out and blow the Angels away. Give up some of your top prospects in your organization. Again, I know the Cubs are not really, you know, sure, they may make a run, but, and he would certainly help this season. But I think the key is trade for him now and show him why you're the best destination. I think that's their best opportunity to land him in this upcoming free agency.
And I can't argue with that. One, though, I think Buster Olney also said this week, the conversation, if the Angels are in more than just quote unquote listening mode, and it gets more serious, like we're going to deal him. And I believe Buster said it, you know, it's Yankees, 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 and then everybody else. And then if you listen to what's the conversation around the Dodgers and even the Padres, and we know the Padres, even though it hasn't worked out this year, they're not shy about doing the boldest and the biggest and whatever's possible. So I don't know that the Cubs have enough to blow the Angels away with a deal when you have organizations like that that are also in the conversation. If the conversation is legit and gets serious, I still think they probably have to just do their best sales job in the offseason as a free agent. And okay, if Shohei says losing sucks, which he did, and he's about, you know, winning because the money's going to be the money. How do you, if you trade Marcus Stroman and Cody Bellinger, and then, you know, you get a bunch of prospects in return, go to the table and show his representatives, say, you know, Shohei comes here, we give you the $500 million plus. And by the way, with Lionel Messi's money, if he's really getting 50 to 60 million a year at 36, I know it's apples and oranges. If I'm Shohei's agent, I mean, okay, if the old guy can get 60 million, well, let's start with that. I mean,
oh, no doubt, Brian. And it's not even that. It's, hey, Messi's also getting equity in all the Apple deal that MLS struck. So he's
unbelievable.
He's like, you know, for the longest time, forever, I think it was Magic Johnson was the first player ever to get some type of equity stake in, you know, and it worked in a contract. And then eventually they, the leagues deemed that that was obviously not in their best interest. And they, quickly found a way to, change that out. But like Messi's like, forget equity in my organization. I want equity in the entire league.
Thank you very much.
All right, you know what?
Yeah.
When you're MLS and you have an opportunity to bring, the world's greatest player to a country where you're not thought of as one of the elite leagues, well, that's what you have to do. You have to give up equity in your league.
Yeah, he's like, the Inter Miami merchandise is nice if I got percentage of that, but let's think a little bit bigger here.
Yeah.
Let's go whole league here. But anyway, Ohtani, I just once the bidding does start, it will be fascinating to see this. I mean, everyone thinks they're going to be in this conversation, and Cubs haven't made a peep or even anyone around the Cubs suggesting that they're going to be serious about it. We've said there's no reason they shouldn't be serious about it because they have the money, and I believe they had 40,000, 44,000 yesterday at Wrigley Field. Still not hurting at the turnstile. Texas and Tampa thinks they would have a shot of getting Ohtani. Would 10,000 more people show up at the Rays games if Ohtani was? And wow. I mean, why would he be interested in going to Death Valley down there and pitching in front of an intimate crowd of even a 25,000 if winning's important to him and Tampa's no closer to China than Chicago
sure.
is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everyone thinks they're going to be walking into that ballroom or that conference room and putting on their best presentation and PowerPoint presentation. But I mean, the Cubs have Chicago going for it. I just don't know if you sell off the pieces we expect them to sell off at this trade deadline, then how do you tell him you're part of the window to win, and other than the division is there for the taking?
You're absolutely right. Like, under this scenario, I think if that's the case, then if you're Jed and that's something you would even entertain, right? Like, okay, what would we have to give up? And honestly, you're probably talking about like four top prospects. Like, I think that's kind of the reality. If you want to land Shohei Ohtani, that's probably, three to four high level prospects from your minor league system is what it's going to cost, just
minimum.
Yeah,
that's without any, that's as a rental, pure
absolutely.
Rental for the balance of the season with no promises, no, we've locked you up to a contract, we know you're going to sign with us, because then, if you have that certainty, then expand that deal to how many off the major league roster and everything else. But I'm with you. Any team, especially if it's the Yankees, Buster, or the Dodgers, whoever gets that leg up by having Shohei in the clubhouse and in the lineup and hopefully in the postseason – and enjoying all that goes along with it, and God forbid they should win something. That's invaluable for that team to be the leader in the clubhouse, literally to get him tied up.
Now he said after leaving his last start early due to that finger issue again, he said he thinks he'll be ready to go for his next start. So we'll see. But the truth is, there's never been a better player available at the trade deadline I say available, obviously, with the caveat that we'll see if he's actually available. You're talking about a frontline starter and the best middle of the order hitter in baseball, and you can go ahead and obtain both. I mean,
and he's in the prime. I mean, it's not like he's on the wrong side of 30.
29
I mean,
years old, right in the thick of he hit his 33rd home run yesterday. He has 139 strikeouts, in 105 innings pitched. He is just ridiculous. And, you want to talk about, if you're Artie Moreno, what more do you need to see, right? I don't know, maybe it's just the face you put on publicly until the absolute last minute, but if you're running an organization, Bri, I know it's fun to go up and to show up and see Shohei Ohtani play every day when he's in your lineup. But, I mean, my question is, how much joy am I going to get out of that for two final months knowing that eventually, because he can't do anymore. It's not, possible.
And you're going to get a compensatory draft pick, when you qualify him, good luck. I mean, it's just...
If ever you were going to turn your franchise around, this would be the way to do it if you're the Angels, is to obtain some elite, you know, four elite level prospects who could set the foundation for your club that you can actually build around and have an actual team, not just a couple of players you rely on to get you one game under 500 through 93 games.
You're not getting value. I mean, what those four or five prospects look like, if two of them end up being all-stars, it's still not going to be value to the guy you just gave away. And I get legacy and, you know, you want to be the owner that had the guy and then got rid of the guy. But, I mean, with Mike Trout and with Shohei, you're still chasing the last playoff spot, if that's even possible. And so you just have to make the best business move you can make right now. And then, I mean, we always talk about, okay, you trade him now and then try to re-sign him in the offseason. I don't know that his love for Anaheim is going to trump the Dodgers, the Padres, which, you know, and the Yankees are the Yankees. I mean, but I mean, the Ricketts should be the Ricketts and the Cubs should be the Cubs. And it's been a while since they had their one and only once a century World Series. You have the financial wherewithal to certainly be in that conversation. You have to pitch the winning side of it, and I'm not so sure you can do that at this point.
We'll talk more baseball, especially coming up at 10:30. Jesse Rogers will hop on. We'll talk to him about the Cubs, Sox at the trade deadline, and even Shohei Ohtani if he thinks he'll be moved. 312-332-3776 if you want to join us. Mellor and Hanley up next. We spent a large portion of our show last week detailing what was going on at Northwestern. Well, we obviously got some clarity as a result of the situation, and it wasn't just the football team that had issues. It was the baseball team as well. We'll recap a little bit of that and discuss that before we get back to baseball here on ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN Chicago. Listen now in HD on our app and on ESPN 1000.
Jeff Mellor, Brian Hanley, hanging out with you till 11 o'clock here on ESPN 1000. And, Bri, last Sunday we spent a good portion of the show. We had Adam Rittenberg on as he was just like an hour after having spoken with a key source in the Northwestern football hazing scandal. You know, he joined us and talked about all the issues surrounding the football program, which ultimately led to the firing of Pat Fitzgerald. And then just 3 days later, Northwestern had to address its baseball program, and they fired Jim Foster on Thursday. I'm sure for a lot of people out there, Jim Foster, they were learning his name as he was being fired because, you know, that's where college baseball kind of resides on the, you know, the casual sports fan's mind. But it leads to the questions of what exactly is going on inside the Northwestern athletic program when you have not just one but two sports where you have hit issues regarding just, you know, just like I said, Fitzgerald found, you know, for having participated in widespread hazing, including forced nudity and sexualized acts. We talked about it a lot last week, just disturbing. And then when you see some of the reporting about Jim Foster and, you know, what, you know, some of the just heinous stuff he was doing there as well. It's really leads you to wonder what exactly Derek Gragg and the athletic director at Northwestern and, you know, Michael Schill, what their plan is going forward, assuming Derek Gragg still has a job anytime soon here.
Well, it seems to me he's an empty suit. And certainly when it came to Pat Fitzgerald, who'd been there and been the face of not only the football team, the athletic department, but arguably the university. And so you have a first year president in Michael Schill, who was just, inducted or inaugurated or whatever, sworn in June. And this is, he waffles, he gives a 2 week unpaid suspension on a Friday. And then Monday said, you know, Saturday said, maybe I erred. And by Monday, Pat Fitzgerald is told your services are no longer needed. The Jim Foster thing, and I'm with you, I couldn't have picked Jim Foster out of a lineup because as much as people aren't paying attention to Northwestern football, they certainly don't follow baseball unless you're an alum or you played on the team or, you know, you have kids or friends or relatives on the team. But when you start looking at this timeline, they how do you have an HR investigation? And the bullying and a lot of the allegations go date back to last fall before he went on to lead the team to a 10-40 season, which yep. I believe is not good. And then after the first road trip, you had two or three longtime assistants say, okay, I'm done with this guy and I'm done. We're out. And his response is, well, maybe they weren't cut out for the job. Maybe they wanted my job. You know, maybe the kids aren't tough enough. I mean, he had a whole laundry list of things that didn't include the way he was running the program. But going back to even how the NU outside investigation was handled, and we still haven't seen the full report. They won't release it. They haven't had a press conference. They haven't answered a question or taken a question. But how do you have an HR investigation into bullying accusations that date back to yeah. last fall, right at, almost immediately after the guy was hired? He's coming in from West Point and
you know, Army. Yep.
Yeah. And they don't even talk to a player. How do you say that's an investigation? And yet they said there was some obviously some of the things that they were investigating were backed up, and they still didn't talk to a player. Then you have the exit of staff. And then in March, Derek Gregg is told specifically what a mess the program is, where the morale is. This guy's got to go. And he's still – Jim Foster's still doing Jim Foster-type things until the pressure came on this week on the heels of the football thing. And then they fired Jim Foster.
Yeah.
I don't know how Derek Gregg is still working. I don't know how their HR department needs to be fumigated, apparently. And I don't know that you have a lot of confidence. And apparently, you know, a lot of faculty and staff at Northwestern wrote 250 faculty members signed a letter to Michael Schill, the president, saying you might want to put the brakes on the new football stadium because you got to figure out what you actually have here in the athletic department before you move on with something like that.
I mean, yeah, it's insane because the one thing is when you're Northwestern University, right? Like above all else, it's the program's morality, which, you know, sure, they've achieved a lot or at least a lot more. They've turned the program into something I think a lot of the alumni can be proud of, or I'm sorry, let me restate, something they thought they could be proud of before they found out about what actually was going on inside the locker room. But for once, you know, over the last 20 or so years where Pat Fitzgerald was, you know, closely involved with the program, the football team had at least no longer, they weren't what they were in the 80s and 90s, which was the laughing stock of Big Ten football, right?
Well, I used to joke, I went to Marquette and I attended grad school at Medill. And I used to say I went to two schools without a football team.
But yeah.
It was back in the 80s, that
of course.
Was pretty much the case. Yeah.
Of course. So, no, they had it seemed like they had turned things around. But it does beg the question, where does Northwestern athletics go from here? And more poignantly, where does the football program go after this? Because they've, you know, you can't be Northwestern and claim, you know, the moral superiority over in some, or at least intimate it in some ways, right? To some of the other programs, but then have this happen. Like, you need to be a better program first and foremost, and, you know, wins and losses be damned if that's kind of the what you're striking as an institution, right? I would think that's kind of what people who rooted for or watched Northwestern were led to believe, is that the college athletes were at least college athletes above all else, right? They were
student-athletes.
The
student-athlete, the student was actually an actuality up in Evanston, that because they recruited a certain type of player who had to be a student, had to be able to, you know, not only meet the challenges, but exceed in the classroom as well as in the you know, athletic program, football, whatever it is, that's how they distinguish themselves, that they can't get the best players necessarily because they actually expect their kids to go to class yeah. and participate and get a degree. And I will say this, and we talked about follow the money last week, you know, that Pat Fitzgerald, if they were going to terminate him, they would have to come to some sort of agreement because of the 8 years left on his $57 million contract. And now we know that he's retain Dan Webb, a high-profile lawyer, who claimed that they've reached not one but two contracts. The disappointment for me, well, there's many layers of it, but that Pat Fitzgerald, again, who's not answered a question or publicly addressed any of it, through statements, he, of course, we know he says he was unaware of any hazing that existed, although he was going to take a two-week unpaid suspension. So he seems to have acknowledged by accepting that penalty that something did, in fact, happen. To what extent, we don't know, you know, whether, you know, you take him at face value, he said he didn't know any of it. But the fact of the matter is, in his statements, not once did he say he feels for the kids who felt they were scarred by said hazing and did have issues with it and felt like their concerns weren't addressed. There was no acknowledgement that the hazing happened. It was all about basically, where's my money? And for a guy who's been the face of the university and we all thought was going to be there as long as he wanted to be there, and Go Cats, he finished every interview with Go Cats because no one believed that was a put on. That's how he invested. He was in the university he attended and the team he coached. But now it just turns into a business transaction. Not once did he acknowledge that there was anything going on post-suspension and post-firing. Not once did he say anything about students hyphen athlete. It's all about, okay, now, you know, you're going to get – I got a lawyer. And we'll see how ugly it gets. I mean, I still assume they'll work something out because I don't think they want – either side wants this to be further – a light shown on further how the university handled it, or whether Pat knew or didn't know, and what he knew and didn't know, and whether he encouraged it or didn't encourage it. And I will say this, Mark Giannis, who, you know, if you want a quote, he's always there for you, a sports consultant. He said, Pat Fitzgerald's now the hottest commodity in college football. No, Mark, he's not. He's going to be in the NFL on somebody's staff. There's no AD in the world who's going to be able to. By the way, he was 1-11 last year, and he's had three of the last four seasons where they've had a lot of losing. He's not the hottest commodity in college football, and no AD is going to be, unless Derek Gregg gets a job somewhere, no one's going to introduce Pat Fitzgerald as the next head coach of said university by the start of next season or even next year.
We will see where they go next and how it plays out. It will be a fascinating way to see what Northwestern Athletics turns into after this. 312-332-3776. He's Brian Hanley. I'm Jeff Meller. Up next, we turn our attention to the Bear, but maybe not the Bear you think.